The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on February 21.
Okay, I don't know why you put, how did 18 end up on the paper then? How did 18 end up on the paper? What are you doing?
Well, that's what happens when you haven't done the show in about a month. You get rusty. Well, welcome to the show. We have Ian Kwasanya here sitting across from me. And it's the Sports Talk 1240. We got a lot to discuss here. We have Jarvis Waring, senior multimedia writer for NBPA, National Basketball Players Association, talking about the NBA in a couple of minutes, All-Star Weekend a little bit, and also about these trades and which team has the advantage going into the playoffs. And we also have Kristen Winfield from About.com, Knicks reporter, which I follow a lot, and he has some interesting stuff that I want to ask him as well on Twitter about the Knicks and where they are right now, which is heartbreaking for us Knicks fans, so I can't say the same for all those Knicks fans that voted also on Twitter.
Let's get to that question later.
Yeah. Let's start off with, of course, the NBA. A little brief reaction to All-Star Weekend. What do you think? Because, you know, Friday was great. We saw Porzingis. He was playing good. He had 30 points. Saturday was probably one of the best nights I've seen in a while. And Sunday was pretty much a shootout and no defense.
Okay, first and foremost, I want to give a big shout-out to my boy Kenny Ducey. You can follow him, Kenny Ducey, on Twitter, writer for Sports Illustrated. He made the most amazing video mashup of Porzingis dancing with his Spanish club team last year, and he has over that Father Stretch My Hands Part 1, one of Kanye West's new things. Honestly, watch the video. It's only 30 seconds long. It's the greatest thing ever. The only thing greater than that was this past All-Star Weekend, because I think it's the best All-Star Weekend we've had
in a long time.
First and foremost, I didn't expect that a dunk contest with only one, quote, household name, if that's what you want to call Andre Drummond, they put on a show, and I think that's the first time we saw a dunk contest that didn't feel mailed in. It didn't feel like an ultimate copycat. You know, Aaron Gordon, I mean, people forget that even though he was injured, he was the number 4 overall draft pick back in 2014. He was just hampered by a lot of injuries. He really came out, and I hate to sound like I'm repeating myself, but what can you say? From bringing out the mascot, which is a huge nod to his organization,
yeah,
to making moves underneath his legs, going behind the back, I feel like people don't understand. Just getting to the rim itself is hard. And he did all that before on the first try and got it to go. I will say that he did a modified version of what Will Barton did, and Will Barton got totally shafted for it, but you know, that is what it was.
Great in general, the dunk contest. It was back and forth. It was like, you know, LaVine against Gordon. It was Jordan against Wilkins. People compare that.
Overtime.
I mean, it went a lot. And you know, either way, I thought it should have been a tie, even though LaVine won it. And that last dunk that Gordon did, that got him to 47, I thought it was just as great as the other dunks. But this LaVine did the free throw dunk, a windmill, and then between the legs. I mean, you can't go wrong with that.
I think the reason, and it's such a tough thing to judge, but we also got to understand these are former NBA players that are doing the judging for the most part. So
yeah.
I trust their judgment. But I think the only thing that really killed Aaron Gordon in the end is the fact that it took him 3 tries. And he's exhausted. And you can understand why it took him 3 tries. And he still pulled off a fantastic dunk.
Yeah.
We could still be going if he notched a 50 on that dunk.
But it was great. And then, you know, Sunday was Kobe's last game in All-Star, you know, pretty much for his career.
Mm-hmm.
And Westbrook won the MVP that game. It was great, but, you know, people are complaining that there was no defense, but it's an exhibition game.
No one really takes it that seriously. Get out. Do people understand how much I think sometimes as fans, we take for granted that they make it look so easy, but that's a lot of hard work, okay? And the All-Star game in every sport but baseball, you really don't have much to prove. You go out, you have fun, you toss alleys, you make plays that you would never try to make in a real NBA game because this game doesn't mean anything.
Exactly.
Literally, you've got teams putting up 170 points, the losing team rather putting up 170 points, winning team puts up 190. They're all blowing off steam. Yeah, they want to compete. Yeah, they want to have fun. But you know what? If your real complaint is, oh, they don't play any defense in the All-Star game, do you really actually want to see defenders going that hard in an All-Star game? If you tell me the answer is yes, your favorite player is Tony Allen, or you're a liar. Don't kid yourself.
But just looking at the score, 190 and 170, I mean, how much the basketball world has changed now? You see those scores now. And it might even go up next year for all we know. If I get to 200, I mean, that's just insane. But, you know, All-Star weekend's over. Second half has begun on Thursday. You know, those 3 days now having basketball was just very, very boring. But when it came back Thursday, everybody got excited for the second half of the season start, and Friday and Saturday and today as well. You know, there were trades made before the deadline, of course, on Thursday. A couple, you know, interesting trades, and we'll talk Zorin about that as well. But, you know, trades that the Hornets made, that the Heat made just to shed money, that the Cavaliers have made, and also the Clippers and Grizzlies, and the Thunder acquired somebody today that played today as well. I mean, looking at these trades, it's pretty much not a splash on, you know, a big name, but it's pretty much a small move that a lot of these contenders are doing.
I mean, I'm looking at them just rehashed. Low-key, I like the move that the Hawks made because what they did in terms of reacquiring Kirk Heinrich, they gave themselves a secondary ball handler behind Jeff Teague. I think also when you want to take Teague off the ball, he really blossomed into such a great player. I don't think a lot of people, myself included, expected much from Jeff Teague when he entered the league. But now when you have Heinrich in, you can afford to play Teague off the ball and allow him to create for himself instead of just always involving other people. I do not understand this deal concerning Tobias Harris from Orlando's perspective, because I really like Tobias Harris as a player.
Young player, too.
And aside from the fact that some dude named Carmelo Anthony is playing the small forward, Tobias Harris is a Long Island kid. You know, he's the kind of dude that you'd have liked to see, oh, come home. And then you could buy into the Knicks actually, quote, rebuilding or whatnot. And they didn't make any moves at the deadline either. But
which is fine. You know, I mean, I felt like if they had nothing to go for and not give up a draft pick, I think that's better if they stay packed instead of giving out draft picks, what they've been doing for most of the time.
Oh, thank God. But what I think more, because I was reading an article on Vice Sports earlier today, going back to the deal involving Tobias Harris, the Pistons had just signed Brandon Jennings not too long ago.
Yeah.
And they traded him and Ilyasova to Orlando, which means it's total affirmation of really what we've done all along. This is Reggie Jackson's show. Reggie Jackson, I got to say, Oklahoma City has a habit of loading up on really, really talented guards.
They do.
But between Jackson, who's now in Detroit, and then the threesome of James Harden, Durant, and Westbrook, I still don't like the trade when it was made years ago, but somehow they really keep reloading. That's a big credit to Sam Presti.
And we're trying to talk about that more. We have Jared Waring on the line right now. Hey, Jared, it's Raymond and Unqua. How you doing?
Hey, how you guys doing, man?
I'm doing well. You know, first of all, you got to tell me about your job and everything because, you know, it's been a while since, you know, we talked and stuff. And you know, I know we kept it kind of low-key on it. But now that you're actually, you know, in doing the senior multimedia writer position, what's it like traveling around the United States going on these teams and covering them?
Yeah, it's been fun, man. You know, it was a job that I thought could be really interesting. You know, the PA never really had, the NBPA never really had a media platform. They had a website, but not a lot of in-depth stories and videos, and just an opportunity. But yeah, no, it's been great. We just revamped our website this past Sunday, nbpa.com. We were working with a video partner, so we're launching some videos soon. One, for example, coming out this week is on Dwight Howard. We transformed him into a zookeeper for the day at the Houston Zoo. really amazing experience, like really showing his passion for animals and working with kids. So we're going to do a lot of cool inside access stuff behind the scenes. And, you know, yeah, it's been good. You know, I've been there for about 3-4 months now, so just rocking and rolling, trying to get things going.
That's really good. So, you know, let's go right into the NBA. You know, second half has started. And there's some trades here that they made. You know, you got the Heat, you got the Clippers and Grizzlies had actually a smart trade, I thought, in my opinion. And you have the Magic also and the Pistons. Which trade right here was a winner? Like, which team was a winner and loser coming out of the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Pistons definitely getting Tobias Harris was fantastic. I know the Pistons also had interest in Ryan Anderson, who Sam Van Gundy coached in Orlando when they went to the finals in 2009. But, yeah, Tobias Harris is one of the best swing men in the game. Plays both sides of the ball, brings them a lot of versatility. And Ersin Oluseo was a very good player, too. I just thought his game was probably more suited on the inside, Ersin's game, where Tobias can really step it out. And I think he's a better mid-range shooter, just overall playmaker. You know, I think Ersin's probably better off the ball. Tobias can get the ball caught up. Get the ball call for him and make a play. And that team is right, you know, it makes the playoffs. You know, they're right outside the bubble right now. So that team can kind of soak up a little bit and get some more wins and move up. So, I don't know. As far as losers go, I think you always look at teams that are kind of in the middle of the heap and want to make a move. You know, the Houston Rockets, you know, you can say that, you know, maybe they want to get a little fresher, younger blood. Maybe looking to trade Dwight Howard. But, you know, I don't want to speak too much on the losers because I might get in trouble with my PA guy. You know, I got to be careful.
Yeah.
But, you know, some sensitivity with missing some players and stuff. But, you know what I mean? I think everybody wants the playmaker at the stretch 4-3 position. You know, that's the game now with you look at what the Warriors doing with Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala. You know, the 3-4 position that could make a play like a point guard, positionless basketball. And that's going to be evolving as we go. I mean, I'm curious to see how Ben Simmons next year out of LSU will kind of be that guy, you know, a 6'10", you know, stretch 3, stretch 4, point forward type of player, you know. So, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, this is a season where no one's going to catch the Warriors, really. They're going to probably repeat. And everyone's trying to figure out where they are in the league now. The game is changing very quickly. And, you know, all these threes and the spread offenses and all this stuff. And there's so many teams who aren't really, you know, adapting yet to that. So you're going to see an NBA revolution in the next 5 years with more of these type of players that the Warriors have and how they've been able to really change the style of basketball. Because, yeah, there were some trades, but really no one's on that level yet where the Spurs, the Warriors, even the Cavaliers aren't on that level yet. Even the Thunder aren't on that level. You know, they're still playing a lot of isolation basketball. So I'm curious to see how things are going to evolve in the next few years.
Jared Itunkwa, happy Sunday to you. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your particular focus with the NBPA. How different has your focus really shifted in your work as you go from covering the NBA sort of on the outside looking into now sort of being more inside in terms of the hierarchy and things like that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I do have more intel. I just can't talk about it. I think the dedication of players is really, really interesting. You know, I think in the world today with Twitter and social media and TMZ and, you know, Bleacher Report, even where I previously worked, you know, there's definitely different spins on how the NBA is covered. You know, it's such an entertaining, flashy league, a lot of fun personalities. But, you know, we also look at sometimes the off-the-court silliness and, you know, a lot of trade rumors. You know, a lot of the talk, you know, especially with Twitter and all that, you know, 24/7 bar talk, it's like all about – the rumors and the fun and the fluff and the sensationalism and the all that stuff, you know, the sarcasm and the hyperbole, you know. But when you're working with the PA, you realize that every player, everyone that works at the PA sees players as real human beings and players that are trying to do something bigger in their lives, even beyond basketball, you know, whether it's working with guys on career development, trying to get them into broadcasting programs, helping them become entrepreneurs, helping them develop their T-shirt line or – you know, we're seeing, like, it's like a family. It's very, very interesting. And I've always been like that. I've always seen players as, you know, bigger than basketball. And the PA is all about that. And there's a really unique dedication to players. You know, how's your family doing? How are your kids? You know, after games, there's 3 or 4 of us just way outside the locker room. and we pull players aside individually without any cameras, without any tape recorders or any video cameras, and we're talking to guys like they literally are part of our family. And the stories that I'm trying to tell are really reflective of who they really are and their missions and goals in life. And, you know, it's an interesting world. It's different. And I'm really enjoying that part of it.
Now, Michelle Roberts, I mean, what a job she's done so far at the helm of the NBPA so far. How have you really gotten a chance to interact with her? As
yes.
How really has she sort of welcomed you into the fold?
She was the one basically that wanted me here. I met with Roger Mason and Michelle. There was a 1 and 2. Michelle's the director, obviously. Roger is the deputy. And had a meeting with Michelle and Roger and pitched my vision. And the next day, Roger called me and said, we want to hire you. So Michelle was very involved with my hiring. We definitely are very communicative. You know, I'm in meetings with Michelle. It's awesome. You know, I don't want to talk too much about details, of course, things that are discussed. But, you know, she's really, really with it, huge passion for the game. You know, just her more expertise is more on the legal, contractual side. But, you know, with being at the union now and Roger, the things that we're doing, you know, whether it's this new media platform, revamping our website to, you know, we're moving into a new office in about 2 or 3 months. It's going to be 60,000 square feet. It's going to have a full court basketball court in there, a training room, massage. We're going to replicate an NBA training center. You know, it's going to have, you know, broadcasting, you know, media stuff. You know, there's a lot of new programs that are being implemented. You know, Roger's done a fantastic job, you know, implementing franchising programs for players, learning about the franchising business with QSRs, you know, the restaurant industry, entrepreneurship, real estate, broadcasting, you know, a top 100 camp in Virginia. We do a Sportscaster U program, which is an extension of what happens in Syracuse. Players go through an actual broadcasting training program where they learn how to become broadcasters beyond playing the game. So there's a lot going on with the new regime, from really helping players, you know, build their brands. We work with a theme called One Court, which is just really about unifying the players in different ways. You know, so it's been really interesting. You know, I think there's a lot of new ideas and a lot of new hires. You know, we've hired a lot of new people the last few months. So,
okay, are y'all still hiring? Because still hiring? This is really.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's been good. You know, different divisions, of course, not just my division, the media, but yeah, there's just a lot of exciting things going on, a lot of growth, a lot of a lot of things that are being implemented. So, yeah, I think it's going to be an exciting time for the PA as we really kind of bring out more of our voice. You know, for many years the PA, and again, I was sort of on the other side, obviously.
Yeah.
But for many years, I didn't really know so much about the PA. I just knew that it really just were involved in negotiations and contracts and stuff like that, but. The big thing with Michelle and Roger and working there is there's more of a voice, there's more of a presence, there's more of a personality with what we're doing, and that's one reason why I'm there too, is to help them with that on the content side, to get players' voices and stories and things like that more out there. So
speaking of personality, you know, earlier in the season you were with the Warriors, and you know, I saw a video of you pretty much recording Stephen Curry on the shot. You know, right now the Warriors are 49-5. Is this pretty much Curry's time where, I mean, pretty much the second half, he's running away with the MVP trophy, or is anybody in contention for that?
Yeah, man, I can't see anyone else. You know, KD and Russell are playing great.
Yeah.
Put them up there, too. You know, LeBron's having kind of a quiet year. Basically, it's quiet because it's all about Steph Curry and the Warriors, but LeBron's still there, and Cavs are number one in the conference. You know, DeMar DeRozan, I think even Lowry could be in that conversation. I think DeRozan's very interesting. The guy doesn't shoot any threes, but attacks the basket at will and really improves his mid-range game. And the team is very good defensively. You know, I put them up there. You know, the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard, you know, you can definitely put him in the conversation. But I do agree with you. I think Curry is the guy. He's just doing what he's doing from beyond the three, you know, 30 feet out. His passing has gotten better. You know, he's his efficiency is ridiculous. He hardly plays in the fourth quarters. You know, so, you know, what can you say about the guy? I've seen him up close, you know, doing the ball handling drill he does before every game. And, you know, I talked to his trainer, Brandon Payne, who works down in North Carolina. And I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the reason why he's doing these pregame workouts with ball handling or shooting is that it's all about activating his mind, his body. So when the game starts, it's like he's already played a quarter. you know, I've seen guys not warm up. I've seen guys just watch film or take a few shots. But, you know, Curry is activating himself. Like, right when the ball is tipped in that first quarter, he's been already playing, you know, for a quarter or two. That's his mentality. So that's why right away he plays so well at the start of the game. That's the whole team for you. You know, I see Klay Thompson with the shooting routine. I see Draymond out there, Andre Iguodala. So the team is very focused and locked in. It's incredible what they're doing.
So do you believe any, like the Spurs or Clippers or Thunder, you see them as a threat to the Warriors because, you know, these lineups and the playoffs, and you know how coaches are going to make adjustments. Do you see any of them in that conversation with them possibly winning?
I don't. I think a few factors. I think the Oracle Arena, home court advantage, you know, they haven't really lost it at all. Undefeated this year, so that's the first thing. Very hard place to play. So any game seven, you got to figure out that's in the Warriors' favor. You know, I think it's interesting because the Clippers made this trade for Jeff Green.
Yeah.
The Thunder are still trying to figure out who they are under Billy Donovan. They're still kind of a somewhat isolation team. The Spurs, you could say the Spurs will be right there, I think. You know, they're obviously dynamic in how all five guys are involved in their team offense, and they have the veteran leadership, the experience to maybe go far in the playoffs. But with the Warriors, you know, not just their starting five, but their bench. You know, every player, when they're on the court, is a playmaker. What I was saying before, you know, anybody can be a point guard. And that's really, I think, the unique part of how they play. It's not just Curry. It's every guy can put the ball on the court and do something with the ball, make a pass. You know, sometimes when you watch teams play, there's like maybe two or three playmakers. And they have the ball and they have the green light to score or shoot or pass. But the other guys are just kind of standing around waiting for the ball. But really, with the Warriors, you know, all five guys are threats, and it's almost like they're playing as robots right now. They know where the ball is going to be going. They're in the right place at the right time. They've been very healthy all year, obviously, another huge factor there. So if they're shooting the ball that well and you know, and they're playing that good of a defense with how fast they play in transition, it's very hard to stop that, you know, over four quarters. You know, they tire you out. They're a very well-conditioned team. I watched them. I'm just in awe how many screens they set. Not just with Bogut and Green, but, you know, Steph Curry putting his body in there, set a screen. Also, Klay Thompson, they're constantly setting screens. They're constantly moving. I don't know how they do it. They're just in such good shape. And that goes for defense, too, by the way. They're switching on pick and rolls, and they're protecting the rim. Even Draymond and Iguodala can protect the rim as, you know, as the big men when they're running a smaller lineup, you know. So I don't know what else to say. They're all in sync, and look at their record, right?
Yeah, right now. Look, going to the East now, the Cavaliers are first, and you pretty much have the Raptors and Celtics right behind them. Is there any of those two teams a challenge to the Cavaliers? Because the Boston is pretty much a pesky team where they lead the league in forcing turnovers, and the Raptors are right there with Kyle Lowry and DeRozan, and you know what they can do, and they have a Valchewicz back, which is he's on the right center, in my opinion. Do you believe those two teams have a chance of beating the Cavaliers?
You know, it's funny. I thought entering the season, I thought the Miami Heat had the best chance.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
You know, with their starting five. But Chris Bosh, unfortunately, hopefully he's okay, and that's tough to hear. Hassan Whiteside, as good as a defender he is, you know, he's still improving offensively. He's still not a threat in the post, really, day-to-day. So that will come over time, but he's still not there quite yet. And Bosh, you know, as I just mentioned. And, you know, just Dragic still trying to adjust the point guard. So, but the Raptors, maybe the Raptors, the Celtics are the one dark horse. You mentioned the Celtics. Like you said, they do play great defensively. Jay Crowder and Isaiah Thomas and Evan Turner, they play such great defense on the perimeter, and they just get after it. They play passing lanes very well. They play a great transition attack. They're very well coached with Brad Stevens. You know, that team can give you a lot of difficulty, you know, with how hard they play. You know, defense is a lot of times just effort. And some teams just don't bring it every night because maybe they were out partying late, or, you know, it's just another day on the schedule. It's a Tuesday night against the Timberwolves. They don't really care, maybe. But Celtics, every night, they care. They want to get after it defensively. They're physical. They punish you. They're like the mini Grizzlies a little bit. You know, they really get under your skin. They play very physical ball. So that's the one team, you know, you could watch in the playoffs. Maybe they can surprise some people. The Raptors, I think, you know, with their chemistry and continuity, they've had the same team for many years now. And they're definitely dangerous. So, you know, you have to watch them. But when all is said and done with LeBron, how he changes the tune offensively on both sides of the ball, too, and their role players, you know, if Kyrie Irving, he's the one guy, if Kyrie Irving is playing at an MVP all-star type level, to compliment LeBron James, you know, creating buckets in the paint and hurting the defense like that, the ball is going to move around. And if JR and Mon, those guys are hitting threes off Kyrie and LeBron, LeBron's penetration, that's going to be very important. But Kyrie has to be big. He's got to be big as a floor leader, as a defensive stopper. Not the greatest defender, but I gotta see Kyrie really elevate in the playoffs. So LeBron's gonna be there. So can Kyrie be consistent enough and not be injured? You know, as you know, he has a very long injury resume. If he can be healthy and be consistent, I know one's gonna stop the Cavaliers. But I think once it gets to the finals, it's the Warriors to lose.
Speaking of the Grizzlies, the aforementioned Goon Squad, I gotta say I love that name. Do you think they actually have a shot to? Well, finals run is out of the question, but do you see them making a little bit of noise? I see them making just a little bit of noise, at least maybe getting past the first round as a team. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think that the way they play defense is they play very testy, very physical, and that's great for playoff-type basketball. They know how to play the slower-type ground-out games, which sometimes playoffs happen. Games come a little slower, and Grizzlies have that experience. But, you know, I just kind of question their offense. You know, they still don't have a lot of young blood. You know, they kind of rely maybe sometimes too much on Vince Carter and some of the older guys to create plays. You know, their age might catch up to them a little bit. And I think also their defense. You know, one thing, even as good as they are defensively, you know, Zach Randolph, to me, curious to see how they're going to play him defensively because, you know, if you watch the last couple of years, they like to kind of go after Zach and pick and rolls. And Zach is not the greatest defender on the perimeter. You know, he's better in the post. And what that happens is it opens up the offense for the other team to really score and make plays. So, you know, they're a tough team, you know, no question about it. You know, I think they have what it takes to win a round, but I don't think they have enough from a scoring standpoint or a youth standpoint to go through these playoffs. You know, the Warriors, for example, and the Thunder with Russell Westbrook, his explosiveness, and the Spurs, even, you know, they have some young guys. Beyond that, and the Clippers could make some noise, too. I'm not trying to discount the Clippers. You know, they definitely have the right guys in place. You know, now they have Jeff Green, so that's always a huge advantage. But, you know, the Grizzlies, I don't know. I don't know if they can go win after a first round. They could probably make some noise in the first round, but beyond that, I don't know.
We have to ask you this before we let you go. When you saw Porzingis the first time, what did it feel like watching a player who's 7'3" and can move like that?
Yeah, no, pretty amazing, man. I mean, I think what's fascinating about him is how well he plays off the ball right now. You know, understanding of spacing. The triangle is great for him because, you know, he's getting those pin downs from the mid post and the put back dunks. His spatial awareness on the court is very, very good. He's not a primary scoring factor. You know, I think over time, I'm curious to see how well he'll become as a primary scorer. Right now, he's not great off the perimeter, taking his man off the dribble. You know, he needs the mid post or the post to do that. He can't yet be a really strong perimeter threat yet. You know, I think over time he'll be great in the mid post, like a Dirk Nowitzki for sure, and man that area, man the low post. He already has the dream shakedown. So, and then the putbacks, like I said, he's stronger and he's more physical and inside than I thought he would be. I thought he would be a little bit more of an outside player, but he's still getting in there and physical and doesn't care about the contact, which is great to see. His thin frame at, you know, 7'3", but yeah, I mean, his distance of shooting and how tall he is and, you know, the mismatches, that's great, man. I mean, it's going to be hard to guard him as he goes throughout his career. I'm just curious to see how well he becomes as a true scorer. Because right now, you know, as most people observe, he's scoring his ball, he's scoring off the ball. But hell of a kid. He's taking it all in. You know, he loves New York. He loves the attention. He smiles a lot. He's great with the media. He doesn't feel like he's under any pressure. You know, New York's a tough place to play for a lot of young guys, but he loves it. He's embraced it. He said he wanted to be in New York even before he got here, and now he's here and he loves it all. So that's good to see. He's taking it all in. They're losing a bit, the Knicks, but he's still level-headed and there every night, you know, for the most part, making a difference consistently, which is great.
All right, Jared, you know, it's been great talking to you. A lot of stuff with the info. I hope you have a great night.
No, man, thank you for having me, man, and stay tuned. Let's hopefully do it again soon.
Yeah, we'll be connected.
Indeed, sure. Indeed.
Yeah, so a lot of interesting stuff about Porzingis, about the Warriors, about the East. We'll be back taking a break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. I got interesting stuff for you. I want to ask you about something. Before we get to the next quarter. Don't worry. This is 12:40 a.m. here in Long Island.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SPORTSTALK1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, Lung Kwa Song Yang here. You know, it's been a good show so far. Let's keep it up there. I got a stat for you I think you want to know.
Oh, yeah?
But Boston, because I keep telling people Boston is a very interesting team, but they're ranked number one in scoring right now in the Eastern Conference. Not, in the NBA, they're around 4th or 5th right there, but one, and which is very surprising because you thought the Cavaliers would be number one. They're number two, actually. And they're 10th in the Eastern Conference, allowing 101 points a game and third in the differential between them, which is a very interesting stat.
I mean, the funny thing about the way Boston plays is that they don't have a name that really jumps out at you unless you're thinking about Isaiah Thomas. And I'll tell you what, he's a deserved all-star. You know, he got the credit he deserved. But when you look for a team that's number one in scoring in their conference, you're thinking, oh, they've got a lot of guys who can really just let it go and can really put up big numbers tonight. But it's really a team effort for them. And that's not to discredit the improvement of Marcus Smart, the emergence of Kelly Olynyk, and even Jay Crowder, who's bounced around the league for a little bit, but still has managed to sort of make his way into an everyday rotation player. That's much credit to both their improvement and also to Coach Stevens. You know, yeah. I think what people kind of missed about picking up a former college coach is that Brad Stevens took two straight teams of two completely different cores to the national championship game. And that's hard to do in college where everything changes from year to year to year.
Yeah.
This time he's got the players. He's built enough of a relationship with them where they buy into what he's selling. It looks a heck of a lot different up there in Boston.
Another strap before we have Chris Winfield talking next year. Stephen Curry ranks number one in scoring, and he's 19th in field goals made. And the only other guard ahead of him is Tony Parker. Everybody else is a center and power forward. Second in free throw percentage and first in three to May. And he has an 88 lead over his colleague and splash player, Klay Thompson, which is remarkable.
He's a cheat code.
Yeah, basically he's a cheat code. Yeah. So, you know, we have a little bit of the Knicks stuff here. And, you know, pretty much this long second half of the season here. We had Christian Winfield from aboutme.com. First of all, I want to say, you know, I follow you on Twitter a lot. You have a lot of interesting facts about the Knicks that, you know, I always want to question if I was there at the press conference. And I appreciate what you do there, especially what the Knicks are as of right now.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you guys having me on the show, too. the Knicks are one of those teams that just they give you a headache because you want to talk about them, but it's just like it just brings out so much emotion. It's just even right now I'm just tearing up talking about it. But oh man, yeah, the press conferences they're pretty cool, and it was. Kurt Rambis is a lot different from Derek Fisher. I actually asked him about Jose Calderon, and he gave me a pretty direct answer, whereas Fisher would try to beat around the bush. So
yeah.
It's pretty working with Rambis so far has been pretty cool.
So let me ask you about this, because, you know, Knicks won yesterday, and they had that bad loss against the Nets. I mean, where is this team right now exactly? Because, you know, they won yesterday. They lost against the Nets, and right now they're just, like, in the middle of the road right now. Where is it exactly?
Well, if you look at the beginning of the season, ESPN had that forecast, and they had them winning 27 games. And I'm like, there's no way this team is only going to win 27 games. But if you're looking at it, they're kind of on par with what ESPN predicted. You know, they're not beating the teams that they should beat.
Yeah.
Like, case in point against the Nets the other day. They beat Minnesota, but God knows when they're going to win another game. You know, it's just like, it's inconsistent play from the top down, and it's frustrating. It's really frustrating to watch.
Do you believe Kurt Rambis can elevate this team to the playoffs with the roster that they have right now?
I don't think Jesus Christ could elevate the team to the playoffs with the roster they have right now, to be honest. The backcourt woes that they have with Calderon, it's not solely his fault. We knew what we were getting when we have a 34-year-old point guard, but it's just tough when you see John Wall pick the team apart, 28 points, 17 assists. And it's just tough when he's getting in there. He's not only creating for himself, he's creating for others. And that's on a nightly basis. You know, we should be beating teams like Boston, you know, who's there. I didn't even realize that they were third in the East. Like, how did that happen?
And they're number one in scoring, too, which is in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, 23rd?
In the Eastern Conference, Boston's number one, and the Knicks are like, they're below top 15. But it's remarkable where Boston is right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at the schedule. There's a lot of winnable games to get back on track. There's a lot of winnable games the Knicks have. The issue is that they don't win those winnable games. So I don't see them pushing for that eighth seed. And the East is really – it's really tough this year. Charlotte just picked up Courtney Lee. I love that trade. I don't see them getting into the playoffs. And then we don't have our draft pick. So it's just – free agency is going to be really interesting.
Oh, man. Christian Ntunkwa, happy Sunday to you. I think you really sort of – opened up on it when you first started to talk on this call. How different is it really going from Derek Fisher to Kurt Rambis? Actually, better yet, let me ask you this. Have you seen the team actually improve since Rambis has taken over? It's only been a couple of games, but do you see any noticeable improvement?
I wouldn't say I see noticeable improvement. I feel like the players woke up. The very first press conference right after, as soon as Rambis got signed, Rambis took the job, he spoke to Carmelo, and Carmelo was like, yeah, this is a wake-up call, because Phil Jackson had said, you know, we can't fire 15 players, so we had to fire somebody. But, like, it was a wake-up call for the players. You know, they know that they're underperforming and they need to be doing better. In terms of improvement, I'd say maybe the rotation's a little bit. I remember the first game he coached, he had Kevin Sarfin in there for 20 minutes. Kyle O'Quinn, Jerry and Grant didn't play. So I would say I think he's going to try to shorten the rotations. He said he was going to try to cut it down to 8 or 9, but we'll see. You know, they have so many players that you never know what you're going to get out of them. So, and that's really the issue. Even with Carmelo, you know, he can go for 30 one night and 13 the next. And the only constant really is KP. So it is frustrating, but it's just the job.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Jaren Grant for a second. I was personally a big fan of the pick. I was really looking forward to see him sort of mature, you know, in New York. How come he hasn't seen the floor too much? Has he really not improved enough to see the floor, or has it just been a matter of wrong place, wrong time?
Well, I think, number one, Langston Gallo has been playing really, really well. And you do have to have Calderon out there because he does have that experience. And secondly, Jaren Grant's had, you know, he's really athletic. He's really quick. He can't really shoot the perimeter jump shot, and he has a tendency of picking up his dribble. You know, he won't. Like, instead of keeping his head up and keeping his dribble, he'll pick it up, and then he'll get caught in double teams and throw him away. So I think it's just he has to, you know, adjust. And, you know, every player says, yeah, I'm getting him adjusting to the NBA game, I'm adjusting to the speed of the NBA. But it takes time. You know, KP doesn't have – he's been playing professional ball. You know, it's not the NBA, but he's been playing professional ball for God knows how long. Nigerian guy. He just has to get used to the speed of the game, and then he's got to work on that perimeter jump. So I think he's shooting like 18% from three or something like that. Yes. I know at one point he was shooting 16%. He's really got to work on that jumper.
You know, looking at this team right now, like, you know, pretty much that under a new head coach, and, you know, there's a different presence in the team. Is the locker room a little bit different than it was when Fisher was there, or is it pretty much the same?
It's pretty much the same. There's not really a big difference in the locker room per se. I know one person that it may have affected a little bit more is Derek Williams, because coming into the season, he played under, I think it was five different head coaches in the last couple of years, and now it's another head coaching change, and it's got to be frustrating for a guy like him. But, no, the locker room is pretty much the same. Everyone's still, they joke around after games. Nothing crazy. The locker room is pretty much the same.
So, you know, they pretty much have a tough schedule right here. I'm going to just give you the games right now, because this is pretty much either a make or break for them, especially in March. They got tomorrow against the Raptors. Then they have the Pacers, the Magic, and Heat that week. Then in March, they have a home game against the Blazers, which is a tough team. And the role against the Celtics, which they are right now, third seed. Home against the Pistons. So they have that trade now. Looks like they're going to be a more dangerous team. And then this West Coast trip of the Suns, Clippers, Lakers, and Warriors. I mean, usually those West Coast trips are a headache for, you know, Eastern Conference team going on the other side of the United States. I mean, is this pretty much a make or break for this team trying to push for a playoff spot in March?
I mean, that schedule is tough. They could easily go 1 and God knows how many L's you just read off.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
It could be tough for them. They're really going to have to get after it on defense. And that's another thing. At the last or press conference, or the one before that, Kurt Rambis goes, you know, we need to find five players who are willing to play defense. And if you have to search for players on your own roster to play defense, you're not going to make the playoffs.
Especially at this time.
It's tough. Yeah, it's tough. I'm looking forward to seeing what Jimmer is going to bring. You know, he should be coming tomorrow or the game after tomorrow. I don't know. Should be there soon. But, you know, I'm looking forward to see if he even gets play time, because they said he's going to practice. He has to prove himself in practice, et cetera, et cetera. But we'll see. I hope he can contribute something, because the Knicks need anything right now. It's just a spark. And who knows? If it was Jeremy Lin last time, it would be Jimmer this time.
Funny thing about it, Christian, I was looking over one of your past articles where you spoke about, you know, a couple of moves that the Knicks could make, and one of them you said was trading for Ty Lawson. Now, far as I remember, nobody touched him at the deadline, but let's say he gets waived. If you're the Knicks, do you chase him or no?
If you're the Knicks, the reason I wanted them to go after Ty Lawson was, A, KJ McDaniels would have been added to that deal. So I believe I wrote Ty Lawson and KJ McDaniels, or was it Jose Calderon and Kyle LaQuinn or something like that?
Right, right, right.
KJ McDaniels is really good. I don't know why he's not getting play time in Houston. He's a solid guard, and I think he would be a great addition, taking some of Sasha Vujicic's minutes. And Ty Lawson, you take his $12 million contract, and next season's not guaranteed. So that's another $12 million added onto the 18 that I'm looking at. That's max player money. You know, you can go out and get a Kevin Durant. You can go out and get Mike Conley, and then someone else to add next to him. If they do waive him, though, they'd have to wait, until after Jimmer's 10-day contract is up, because they signed him with the last roster spot, and he might be gone by then, Ty Lawson. I don't know. I would love to see him in a Knicks jersey for 10 days just to see if he has anything in the tank. I haven't watched him much. You know, I've been watching so much Knicks basketball. It's like, if another team comes on, I just want to go to sleep. But no, I think I'd like to see him, not for the whole season, maybe for 10 days, just to see what he can do, because we don't even know what he can do. All we know is that he's getting these charges for drunk driving or whatever, but no, I haven't really gotten a chance to see him play. So, yeah, I'd say I'd like to see him in a 10-day contract.
How frustrating is Carmelo Anthony right now? You know, he's pretty much in the same situation as last year, but, you know, he was injured and he was out for pretty much the remainder of the season. But this year now, he's still battling through his knee soreness. But how frustrating is as a person that just wants to win with this team?
Man, I wish I could just, like, open Carmelo's head and read into it and see what he's thinking, because I know he's got to be frustrated. But I feel like he's made his mind. He wants to win in New York. I don't think he's going to waive his no-trade clause. So I think he wants to win in New York. He loves KP. They have a great relationship. I think next season the Knicks are going to make a playoff push. They're going to sign someone in this offseason. And I think he knows that. And he said, you know, you got to trust in Phil. You got to trust in Phil. I think he probably was a little annoyed that they didn't make a deal at the deadline to upgrade that backcourt. But at this point, the season is kind of a wash, especially with that schedule coming up. Yeah, I think he's probably realizing that. He does look good, though. I know he had knee soreness, but the other day he looked pretty good. So I think he should be healthy, but I know he's got to be frustrated with the way the team is performing right now.
Speaking of trust, you know, Phil, there's reports earlier before a trade deadline about his contract of opting out and possibly going back to the Lakers to be with his wife, Jeannie Buss. Is that possibly that could happen if they don't go anywhere next year?
Oh, man, I don't know. You got to ask Chris Broussard for that one. He's got I don't know anything on that. But I will say that I hope he doesn't leave, because this roster that they put together, even though it's not performing to where we thought it would, it's not a bad roster, you know, with what they had. And I do have a feeling they're going to make some key additions. They're going to probably bring in a really, really good head coach over the summer. So I'm hoping he doesn't go. I have no idea if he stays or if he leaves, but I feel like if he does stay, this ship is going to turn around really soon.
Speaking of head coaches, we're talking to Christian Winfield, Knicks beat reporter for About.com. Who can the Knicks actually get? I know there's a lot of talk about Tom Thibodeau crawling his way to Madison Square Garden or whatever. But if there's one thing we've known about when it comes to news about the Knicks, it comes with a lot of hype, a lot of sizzle, and very little substance. Who would actually come coach the Knicks?
I think the better question is who would Phil go get to bring – because everyone wants to coach the Knicks. You know, Tom, you know, you said he wants – he would crawl – to coach at the Garden.
I don't really believe him, but let's say it's true.
In a dream scenario for me, it would be Tom Thibodeau and Brian Shaw, or Tom Thibodeau and Jeff Van Gundy, but that's not going to happen. So I know that Brian Shaw is on the short list. Maybe Luke Walton, but Luke Walton is talking about he wants to be in a perfect scenario before he throws himself in, and New York is not the perfect scenario. I wouldn't discount Tom Thibodeau, though. You know, I really think that everyone in the organization knows that defense is a concern, and everyone in the organization knows Thibs is a defensive coach. But he does run his players into the ground, so I've heard. So I would love for Thibs to come, but when it comes to the Garden, when it comes to the Knicks, you never know.
In terms of Tom, though, you know, somebody put a video out a few weeks ago. I think Alan Hahn also tweeted this out. Pretty much a video of him doing a triangle set, I guess, with the Chicago Bulls, which I didn't notice about this. But you think if Phil Jackson, and I don't think he would do this, but we set some agreement with him on, you know, pretty much coaching defense, but we're still implying the triangle, you think that could ever happen?
I don't think that he would say, hey, you have to run the triangle. But I think that he would – I think that there's a certain way that – Phil wants the offense to run, which is, you know, share the ball, trust each other. We're not going to be heavy on ISO sets and things like that. I think that what would happen was he would get assistants that were either triangle disciples or coached under Phil or something like that. Just some like an assistant just to add. So that's why I thought that Thibs and Brian Shaw would work, because Brian Shaw, you know, he was under Phil for a while, and that would make the most sense, Thibs and Brian Shaw, but. Again, you never know what's going to happen when it comes to these guys.
I mean, certainly anything could happen. And, you know, looking at this team right now, you know, the one bright spot you could say is Porzingis. You know, he's ranked sixth in blocking in NBA. He's pretty much second in scoring behind – I mean, actually third in scoring behind Karl-Anthony Towns and Okafor. But pretty much second in 3 points made behind D'Angelo Russell. I mean, this kid right now, he's 20 years old. The sky – is the ceiling high for him? In the NBA?
Oh, my God. I think his head is through the ceiling already. But actually, funny story, the first time I ever, like, got to go into a Knicks game this season and I saw him, I just looked up and, like, my head was at his stomach. Like, no lie. And I'm not short. You know, I'm 5'10". I'm not, like, short. But, like, I was literally looking into his stomach. It was crazy. But, no, yeah, he's like Kevin Durant said, he's a unicorn. He can do everything. I just can't wait till he starts pulling those 30-foot jumpers. You know, you'll see him. He'll be out there, he'll be at 30 feet out, and he'll hesitate. Like, you know he wants to shoot it, but then he just, like, comes back to his senses and passes it. And it's like, no, if you want to shoot those shots, you take them.
You might as well.
No, I can't wait. I can't wait. The next 3 years when he turns into a superstar, it's going to be awesome.
I think I speak for the majority of Knicks fans who actually want to be honest with themselves, or at least people who follow the team when I say that Kristaps Porzingis came out of nowhere. I wanted Jahlil Okafor so bad. And it felt like when he was first picked, he was one of those boom or bust picks that was going to end up being another Darko Milicic or someone of that nature. Do you think that New York is sort of overcompensating for that a little bit and just all about KP? Or do you think it's just a result of him really being better than advertised?
I think when he caught that first putback dunk, everyone just lost their minds because I didn't think he was going to come in trying to dunk on everybody. And now he's really going up and grabbing these boards. And, like, he's going for one a game, and he's, like, at least tried. Like, you could see him, like, a shot will go up, and he'll, like, creep up from the three-point line and jump up, and then he'll miss a couple. Like, he'll, like, the ball will bounce on the other side. But he's actually, like, trying to get those. And even the kids that were booing him are loving him now. It's just, like, it's really, you got to be happy for him. You know, I didn't know how he was going to respond to the New York media, to the pressure, you know. Darren Williams couldn't do it. A lot of people can't handle New York. But he took it. He's taking it in stride. He's loving it. You know, we're loving him, too. It's great to watch him.
I guess we'll ask you one more question before we let you go, Kristen. This team, the schedule, I said it before, and then pretty much to April. What's your prediction, basically, on how many wins they can have? Realistically.
Man. Realistically?
That's such a wide spectrum, Ray. Come on.
It is. It's like if Carmelo's
over 30,
healthy,
over or under 30.
Oh Lord,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, is Melo gonna be healthy? Is Calderon gonna play defense? how's that gonna work?
For them to get impact.
When the season started, I predicted them winning 33 to 35 games. Looking at the schedule now, what are they? 23 and 33.
24 and 33. Yeah.
Yeah. That means they would need to win 10 more games. That's hard. I can say they can go for 31 wins. I don't know if they can pass that.
I
know
they're
going to win more than 27.
Yeah, I can agree with
that. Sure. But I don't know if they got 10 more games this year. It depends. It's so many variables. You know, are the other guys going to wake up and play defense? Is Jimmer going to go on a shooting spree? You know, you never know. So I would give them 32 wins at most, but it's so tough, man. It's so tough. It's a heartbreak.
I'll tell you one thing. We'll be in trouble as fans if we're relying on for that to save the season.
I think we're already in trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Kristen, it's been fun talking with you. We'll stay in touch.
Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime. Yeah. Anytime. I love it. You know, I told my mother, so I'm this radio show. Made it, Mom.
Mom, this is for you.
It's a good start. It's a good start. We'll be in touch. Don't worry. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too, guys.
So, launch stuff. Well, I've just said before, we'll be in trouble as fans if we're relying for that the same season.
Okay, I'm going to give Kristian a whole lot of credit here because people who remember this might end up giving me some stuff for it. But I said that the Knicks would finish over 500 and make the playoffs at the beginning of the season. What an idiot.
What an idiot.
I expected Aflalo to add more than I think he's given us because we see him a lot in that high post set, which kind of works, but he's an efficient three-point shooter, but we don't see him taking a lot of threes nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, I really saw Robin Lopez been just as good as advertised. If you're expecting him to give you a double-double a night, well, that's not who he is. Porzingis has been way better than advertised. Carmelo, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a nice.
And I've got a lot of respect for Calderon because he's really the old head and he's trying to, you know.
But he's just, he can't guard people.
I don't understand why they thought it was such a great idea to make him the starting point guard when you have Jaren Grant right there. I understand that, yeah, Grant has to go get a jump shot and there are certain things that he's going to learn about the speed of the pro game. But I feel like they did him and the team a disservice because what helps is that he's 6'5".
Yeah.
He's a really long guard, which means you can afford to play him off the ball or on the ball, or at least use him more than they have been using. Langston Galloway, shout out to the Atlantic 10, by the way. He made every single year I watched Atlantic 10 basketball, he made every year miserable, a player for St. Joseph's. That's a credit to how good he was, and He still just gets better and better and better. He's beating the detractors. He's beating the odds. I think we should see some more of him as well.
You know, going back to what Zwoing said earlier in the show, there's one thing that caught my attention. It was a statement that he said about the Warriors as a group. Everyone's a point guard on their team, basically. And that's a strong statement to say of a team that, pretty much like we said before, they're a versatile team in general. But it's pretty strong when you say everyone's a point guard, which means pretty much it's unstoppable for them to even – it's hard to beat them in general.
It's a basketball coach's dream because it's not that I like the idea of roles when it comes to who's going to do what on a team. But when you have more than one player who can run the show without you having to call a player or what have you, that makes you so much more dangerous. And any team can go small. Any team can go small. We've seen it happen before with mixed results. But the fact that Zwirling brought up that, yes, every player can be a point guard, that means every player can run the show. That means every player can do more than just get himself a bucket or get himself involved.
Yeah.
If you have more than two or three players who can make the pass before the pass that gets you a good shot, seriously, you can't ask for much more.
And, you know, speaking of the Knicks, because we have a little bit of time here, before we have our new host, Andrew
Claudio, man.
Claudio.
I know he's waiting. I think he got here earlier. I remember when we had our first show I think it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
I don't think we were even in this early. I give him all credit in the world right now. Yeah.
That's dedication. I would give him credit. And then, you know, next 2 weeks from now, I hope everybody's listening. It's our anniversary of doing the show together.
Don't make that sound any weirder than it already does.
And for me on the station for 2 years, but it's been great. But, you know, we'll keep it going. But before we pretty much end the show to him, thinking about this Knicks, what's your prediction on over under 30 games they win?
We'll be back before then. Come on now. But what'd you say? They're 24-33?
Yeah. In their schedule.
Oh,
and
Lord.
It's pretty brutal. What's that West Coast trip?
Let's go down the list until we come back. Let's see. Home against the Raptors, loss.
Loss.
Road against the Pacers, loss. Home against the Magic, we'll give them a win.
Well, Magic's playing pretty good, but yeah, we'll give them a win.
They can steal one against the Heat.
Probably, yeah.
They're going to get clapped by the Blazers.
They beat them before. Maybe the Blazers want revenge on them, but we'll see. Yeah, pretty much.
And we should be back by the 5th?
Around 5th or 6th, around there. But, yeah.
Yeah, the Blazers are going to clap them.
Yeah.
The Celtics are going to clap them.
The Pistons are going
to
clap them.
And the Pistons are going to clap them.
Group. And that West Coast trip is just pretty much a dust step for them. So
they're going to get two more wins by the time we get back.
Season's over, everybody, for the Knicks fans. And they want to watch the games, but it's pretty much season's over the West Coast trip. Well, I want to thank Brian. He's always doing a good job on the boards. I want to thank Jarvis Waring. You know, pretty much in touch since the beginning here, talking about NBA. I want to tag Kristen Winfield from About.com News Reporter and Uncle Asanya here, as always, in the show.
Hey.
Pretty much. And we have Andrew coming up next, talking about Moby at Sports Box 1240 AM WGBB.
Necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.